What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Evershed Sutherland, Ireland's largest and most established global law firm, with full service teams for your legal and tax solutions.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair this week, Billy Han. He's the CEO of Dublin Bus. Billy, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hello, Bobby. It's great to be here.
Now, I want to bring you back to your early days. Grew up in Ballymun, Poppentry, and Oatwell, then moved on to Ashbourne. So you're a man who came up the hard way. I think you are. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you could say that, Bobby. Yeah. You know, I lived in Ballymun until I was 18 years of age at which stage my mum and dad moved out to Ashbourne in County Meath. But I have very, very fond memories of Ballymun growing up there. There's a great sense of community and great sense of support of the people, you know. And in many ways, Dublin Bus, or CIE, which it was known at the time, it was a real workhorse of the transport system. So very, very important to the community of Ballymun.
Now, your own journey, and I know you were involved in swimming at an early age, and I think your first job, which probably wasn't a bad part-time job, was a lifeguard in a Dublin Corporation pool to keep a few quid coming in. But your education is interesting. You went to Carlow IT, then you went and did a degree in Bolton in the UK, and then you did a master's in DCU. So this was all on the job learning. I'm taking that from what I've just read.
Absolutely, Bobby. You know, the swimming itself as a junior, you know, from the age of 7 to 13, I swam competitively for Aer Lingus. And to be honest with you, that was my father looking at me growing up in Ballymun, saying he's a young lad with a lot of energy who could get up to a bit of mischief. So let's get him busy doing something. So I suppose the swimming in many ways, what that taught me was that to be successful required a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication. But I did move out of that, and as you said, I did probably go a little bit of an unconventional route with regards to education, and I did my diploma in electronic engineering in Carlow and followed that up with a degree in the UK in Bolton Institute of Technology, where I'd done my degree.
I think it's really interesting what you say about, you know, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go in and do your swimming, and knowing that if you don't practice, you don't really give this your all, you're not. And like the learning that you actually managed to take from that and bring into your business life must have been quite telling.
No, absolutely. But look, nothing comes easy in life. Yeah. It's as simple as that. And you know, people talk about nature and nurture, and I'd be very much on the nurture side. Like you need to work extremely hard. You may have some hidden talents there, you may have some natural talents, but the reality is, to be successful, whether on an educational point of view or a sporting point of view or a business point of view, you need to work extremely hard. And that grounding at a very, very young age was very, very fundamental to my sort of way in which I approach things.
Now, you managed to get a job in the Irish Aviation Authority, again, another wonderful organisation, where you served 28 plus years. You did 9 different roles in there. So maybe, first of all, how did you get that job? Just interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting, Bob, because I came back from the UK in 1993 with an honours degree in electronic engineering, and I thought I was made, and I thought I was going to walk into a job, to be honest with you. But I didn't, okay, because we were in recessionary times back then. So getting employment was really, really difficult. As a matter of fact, most of my friends had gone to Australia, New Zealand, America, and I was very, very close and going there. But I literally seen an advertisement in the paper, because I was looking at the papers on a Thursday and a Friday, as you did back then in 93 in the Independent and the Irish Times. And I was applying to every job that came along that mentioned electronic engineering. And lo and behold, the Irish Aviation Authority looked for applications. I applied. I'd done an interview. I got given the job and started in 1994 and had 28 wonderful years in the Irish Aviation Authority.
So when you say you did 9 different jobs in your career in the IAA, like a lot of these jobs would have been quite different in terms of management responsibility, technical aptitude, all that kind of stuff.
You've described it perfectly well, Bobby. Like my initial, when I came in simple terms, I was a graduate engineer who was maintaining and supporting communications, navigation, surveillance and air traffic management systems that supported air traffic controllers in their day-to-day work. And the first few roles I had in there were largely around managing those systems and supervising people who are managing those systems. But then I progressed into being a specialist in navigation systems. Then I progressed onto project management. then into engineering management,
great,
and then into general services management at the ATC, and was lucky enough to be part of the iconic new air traffic control tower project management team at one stage as well.
So then to replace that after 28 years, planes to buses, that's got to be another transition of note.
It absolutely is, Bobby. And look, but in simple terms, and I'm going to be honest with you, I was a little bit apprehensive myself, you know, after being 28 years in an organisation and going into another organisation, which I was kind of perceiving to be very, very different. It wasn't so different. That's the reality.
Right.
It was another form of transport. It was running a 24/7 operation. So from an operations point of view, whether you are, you know, providing separation to aircraft and airspace to air traffic control, or you're providing a bus service, the principles are fundamentally the same.
Okay. Tell me about the organisation Dublin Bus. Again, a fleet of over 1,000 buses, 4,000 employees. Like, it's a big machine, a lot of moving parts, customer facing, you know, 146 million customer journeys every year. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong and all that.
There is, Bobby, and you hit the nail on the head there as well. It's a large organisation with massive scale. Look, we've over 4,000 employees, as you said there, who are absolutely dedicated to keeping our city moving on a daily basis, which is obviously really important to our business. But we've 121 routes across the greater Dublin area, and we serve 146 million passenger journeys on an annual basis. So really, really impressive in terms of scale. And of course, from a public-facing point of view, much, much different than the organisation I was in beforehand.
And tell me then about working in an environment where there's a subsidy. It can be tricky in the sense that you're never really your own master when someone else is giving you a subvention of sorts. There's probably politics around that, but tell me about managing the commerciality about that.
In some ways, it's no different, okay? So from the point of view, I would still be of the opinion you treat every penny as if it's your own and as if it's a private organisation. We are absolutely funded by the Exchequer, as you're well aware. But we treat that money very, very preciously. So we would manage it accordingly. So we would have all the various different governance aspects in there that would be in any sort of private organisation. So whilst it's the Exchequer money and you're not fundamentally your own boss, we would still be very, very careful around how we would spend that money.
Tell me about the two things, the transition to electric buses. I presume it's probably had its teething problems, let's say. Do you see that as the future, or do you remain to be convinced?
No, it's a very exciting journey that we're on, and I think we need to remember why we're on that particular journey at the moment, and that's basically to support the National Transport Authority and the government in meeting their climate action targets. But it's a really exciting project. We're in the process of electrifying our fleet, as you say. We need to become carbon neutral by 2050. So this is a step on that road to achieving carbon neutrality by that particular time frame. You're absolutely right. It's relatively new technology, and from my technological background, when you have new technology, you will always have those teething problems which you just mentioned earlier at the start of implementation of those programs. So we're expecting that. So there will be times where we're having issues and we're having problems and we'll have to slow down the implementation of, or even pause the implementation. But that's a natural process when you're introducing such new technology into your operation.
And what percentage of the fleet is electric today, and what are the aspirations there?
It's still quite a small percentage at the moment. So we have over 1,000 buses in our fleet. We have 30 electrified at this moment in time. By the end of this summer, we hope to have close to 130 vehicles electric on the streets of Dublin.
Tell me about the new, and again, consumers will be interested in this, the new routes that have been talked about for so much and for so long across Dublin. And I'm sure there's a huge amount of planning and research and God knows what that goes into all this. But is Joe Public a little bit concerned that, you know, the traditional into town, out of town, which we all grew up with, that we're moving away from that, and maybe people are a little bit wary about the new way of getting us across and around the city?
It's a really interesting point that you raise, and I'm assuming we're talking about Bus Connects, which is the route network redesign which the National Transport Authority have developed in consultation with the bus operators, but also with a significant amount of consultation with the public. Okay, so that consultation has already had. And in simple terms, what they're trying to do there is provide more connectivity to more people on the bus network. So the intention is really, really good. People don't like change, Bobby. You're absolutely right. But the reality is we need to change if we're going to have a public transport system with dedicated bus corridors where we can start guaranteeing punctuality rather than sort of mixing in with the traffic like we are on a day-to-day basis now. Then we need that change. We need those dedicated bus corridors and we need to have them sort of in place as quickly as we possibly can.
What do you make of all the infrastructure around cycling and all that, Billy, across the city? You know, I was looking at a bus in Dean's Grange there the other day. There's a cycle lane and the bus has to basically sit in the traffic with everybody else because of the new introduction of a cycle lane. Does that frustrate you in terms of trying to do your job as Dublin Bus every day and get people from A to B?
Yeah, in an ideal world, Bobby, I would like dedicated bus corridors like the rail tracks have, okay? So the railway run on dedicated tracks which they can operate on a daily basis. Well, you're right, we're integrating with the traffic which is causing us difficulty with regards to congestion in our city. I've actually been quoted as calling our city a city of brake lights because we're sitting in traffic most of the time. As a matter of fact, we've been quoted as being the second most congested city in the world.
And that's not to be proud of.
No, it's not. But I'd be very supportive of active travel. Okay, but so in simple terms, we need to take space away from the car user and make more space for public transport because, you know, in reality, we can carry more people than a car can carry. And that's really good from a sustainability point of view and from a city point of view. So we would be supportive of the bike lanes, but we need to get more space for the bus some way or another.
Tell me what it's like. You talked about 160 million customer journeys per annum. You're the CEO of Dublin Bus. If you go to the pub on a Saturday night, how often does some fella come up and say, I was on the 46A and it took me 2 hours to get to my job? How often is that an everyday thing for you at the weekend?
The funny thing is, Bobby, I don't even have to get to the pub. So when I'm on my way to the pub, everyone's stopping me and saying, what about my 6? What about my H3? What about my 46 or my 17 or whatever that happens to be? So it's an occupational hazard that I just have to put up with, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And finally, then I wanted to come back to swimming. Something that maybe people didn't know about you, but you swam across the English Channel, which I believe is all of 26 miles, as part of a relay team and charity in 2009. Tell us about that.
I did, Bobby. As just mentioned earlier, I was a competitive swimmer as a junior and I'm now competing at master's level in both open water and in pool swimming. So I've always kept a keen interest in swimming. In 2009, I would have loved to have a pop at it solo, to be honest with you, but I just wouldn't have had the time to put in the training required to do it solo. So myself and four other colleagues in the Irish Aviation Authority, we were thinking of doing something for charity. It was the Prader-Willi Syndrome charity and another charity regarding a young lad who was dying from cancer at that particular time.
Sure.
And four of us wanted to try and, you know, raise some money through charity. And we said, why could we do this? And we were all swimmers. So we decided, why not do a relay swim across the English Channel and raise some money that way? So that was the background behind that.
Good man.
And we had a fantastic adventure in doing so.
Oh, well done. Any jellyfish?
Plenty of jellyfish. The most daunting part of it was swimming at night time, believe it or not, and touching off things you couldn't see.
Oh, stop.
And of course, your mind starts racing, of course.
Billy Hans, CEO of Dublin Bus, thanks for joining us today and every success in the future.
Thank you, Bobby.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Evershed Sutherland, Ireland's largest and most established global law firm, with full service teams for your legal and tax solutions.